Chapter 1. The Tedious Introduction Right Before the Murder. The day began much like any other day. I woke at 7, showered, ate breakfast, got the paper, dressed, and was out the door by 8 o'clock sharp. I took the 8:15 trolley into Surrey, which gave me time to read the day's stories. By 8:30, I've got off the trolley and walked the rest of the way to the small office where I work. Let me introduce myself. My name is Arthur Bastings. I work in a private detective agency assisting my employer in his cases. Normally, I walk in the office and set up shop while waiting for Mr. Quaro, my employer, to come in. However, this morning was different. As I walked in, I noticed Mr. Quaro's office light on. "Is he here already?" I asked the secretary. "Yes, it's the strangest thing," she said. "He came in here about 8:20 in a frenzy, waving a newspaper and shouting. He's been in his office pacing like a madman waiting for you."
"I'd better go and see him then," I remarked dryly.
Quaro saw me as I walked in. "Ah, Bastings, mon ami, have you seen the paper?" Let me try to describe Mr. Quaro. He was a short, rotund little Belgian man with a joyful, upturned little Belgian mustache and a sharp, quick little Belgian brain. He had a tendency to get overexcited, but this was my own opinion.
"Which part of it, Quaro? There are a lot of pages in a newspaper, you know. I myself rather enjoyed page 3.
No, mon ami. I am talking about the convention. The convention, mon ami."
"Convention? Oh, that's right, the National World War II Convention. I remember reading something about it. What of it?"
"Do you have any plans for next week?"
"Actually, cancel them. We are going to the convention."
"What? For heaven's sake, why, Quaro?"
"I have no idea. It's just a feeling I have. A mysterious feeling."
"Oh, that explains everything!" But it was no use arguing with him. The next week, Quaro and I checked into rooms at the Marriott Hotel in London, where several of the other convention-goers were staying for the week-long event. We got rooms next to each other on the third floor. Quaro suggested we go to the convention floor. We walked down the hall to the lift. Suddenly, from the other end of the hall, the double doors burst open to reveal a platoon of dark-suited bodyguards, almost sprinting towards us, carrying a young man with an electric bagpipe over their heads. The bodyguards headed straight for us, or rather, for the lift. One of them shouldered me aside as they filed in so that I fell to the ground. The lift doors closed, leaving Quaro and I looking at each other in the hall. "Wonder what all that bother was about," I muttered. No sooner than the words fell from my lips than the double doors flew open again. A veritable mob of shrieking teenage girls came at us, their mouths foaming.
"Where'd he go?"
one of them shouted. She took notice of me and Quaro.
"Where is he?"
she screamed, yanking the lapels of my suit jacket and spraying me with foam from her mouth.
I beg your pardon, miss? Who?"
"Andy McWealthy,"
she yelled in my face. One of the other girls chipped in.
"He's so dreamy."
All the girls swooned. One of them fainted.
"Best things, mon ami, I think they mean the man who is accompanied by the dark-suited man," said Quaro.
"Yes, yes, that's him!"
the girl shrieked, spraying me again.
"Where did he go?"
"He took the lift," Quaro answered calmly.
The girls groaned, but the one holding me yelled back,
"All right, girls, as many as can fit, take the lift. The rest of you, take the stairs. Don't worry, we'll find him. Move out!"
The girls split into and soon the hall was empty again except for Quaro and I. "I almost feel sorry for him," I said. "But what in blazes is Andy McWealthy doing at the World War II convention?"
"That I do not know," Quaro said. "But I think we will find out soon enough, mon ami."
"What makes you so certain?"
"It's just a feeling I have. A mysterious feeling."
Eventually, we got to the convention center. The entire floor was bedecked in World War II memorabilia. Flags, uniforms, vehicles, and weapons were everywhere. Booths were set up and speakers were talking to audiences about the war. Presently, the main speaker was an old bald German man expounding on how the Nazis were all misunderstood people, and it wasn't their fault at all for the Holocaust and the millions of dead soldiers and destroyed lives and the like. The man was standing on a stage with the podium in front, Allied and Axis flags on both sides, and a large curtain behind. He was really quite boring. The audience dwindled down to just a few people.
"In conclusion," he said, but he was cut off. From behind the curtain, a high-speed bagpipe riff sounded, followed by a pumping synthesizer.
The curtains opened to reveal Andy McWealthy and his band performing their triple platinum hit, "Let's Have Sex, Baby." Immediately, the mob of teenage girls swarmed the stage, squealing like so many pigs. The German man looked as though he would have a stroke. One of McWealthy's bodyguards took the man and tossed him off the stage. At this, the German snapped back into reality.
Scottish filth! I'll make you pay!
But the crowd was too thick, and the man couldn't make good on his threat. McWealthy sang the chorus.
Let's have sex, sex, baby, because I want you bad, bad. Yeah, really want to do it, baby, 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 baby. Let's have sex, baby!
Then came the bagpipe solo. The notes blazed lightning fast out of the instrument. The music rose to a climactic pitch and then ceased. The audience was reverentially silent for a moment, then exploded into applause. McWealthy started talking into his microphone.
So, thanks a lot. We're performing here because World War II is, like, important and stuff. And we're getting paid, so, yeah.
McWealthy started playing again.
Quarrow turned to me. Shall we go and see the rest of the convention?
He asked. I thought you'd never ask. We walked away from the noise. Further ahead, we heard angry shouts. We arrived in the middle of an altercation between the German man we had seen earlier and an elderly English lady, although one could hardly call her a lady at this moment.
Liar!
She yelled.
You know bloody well Hitler was a loony. Take it back!
I will not, you crazy English buzzard. Der Führer was a genius!
He was not, and you know it. Admit it!
The lady began whacking the German with her purple umbrella. I rushed in to intercede and got whacked with the umbrella for my trouble.
Madam, I spluttered and got whacked again. Cease and desist, I implore you.
Quarrow ran to calm the lady. Hush now, madam, tis over and done.
I turned to the German man, but he was hobbling away and muttering. The lady now with Quarrow yelled out a parting shot.
Lying hun!
The man yelled back without turning around.
Crazy English!
I turned back to the lady in Quarrow. She was about 70 years old and wore the most ridiculous purple hat, along with a hideous purple dress and a purple umbrella.
I suppose I should thank you for helping me with that boor of a German, the lady said. My name is Lady Edith Borington. My late husband fought in the war. It's funny, he seemed so eager to leave me here and go to the front lines.
Small wonder, I muttered, massaging my head. I am Hercule Poirot, and this is my assistant, Monsieur Bastings. We are entirely at your service, madame.
Oh, that's quite all right, now that you've chased off that scoundrel of a Nazi,
Lady Borington said.
I tell you, that man is good for nothing.
She knowingly touched the side of her nose with a finger.
Mark my words, he's up to something.